It's been 10 years for Frasier, right?
Yeah.
10 seasons?
10 seasons, 240 episodes.
And another one coming? Is the next one the last one, you think?
I have a feeling definitely it'll be the last. Yeah, I know Kelsey would like to go another year. In fact, I think everybody else would, but I'm sort of looking forward to it being over.
Do you ever think it would go on this long? I mean, it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Never in a million years. I mean, 11 years. It's amazing. There aren't many shows that have lasted that long.
And stayed strong. I mean,
thank you. And that's right. Why I'm hoping that next year will be our last, because it's just getting harder and harder to come up with stories. When you figure 10 years, that's 240 episodes, and each episode has two stories, an A story and a B story, so that's 480 stories, mm-hmm. plus another 48 that we're going to be doing next season. And, you know, there comes a point where you just say, what can we say?
Right, it's been done. It must be hard to walk. I mean, you've done fine, right? I mean, the money's been there, so now you've got the freedom to go out and do whatever you want, or take
exactly.
summers off and all of that.
Yeah.
Any spin-offs, do you think? I mean, I kind of hope not.
I doubt it. I don't think any one of us would ever want to spin off something like Frasier.
I guess it came from a spin-off, didn't it?
It did. But, you know, we've been the most honored half hour in television history, and how do you follow that up?
Right.
I don't think you want to spin. I know David definitely doesn't, or Jane or Perry, and I hope to spend the rest of my life in Chicago, so I don't want to go back to Los Angeles again and do another TV show.
When I tell people I'm going to talk to you,
uh-huh.
everyone, and I'm sure you get this a million times, but they're like, oh, ask him if he ever forgets to limp.
Yes, I have. I've forgotten my cane sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get up and start to walk, and the audience just...
They catch you.
Roars,
right.
You know, and go back. And we mess up a lot, you know, because we get a new script every day. It's kind of harrowing.
Right.
You do it for the writers, then you go home, and then the writers do all these rewrites, and they send that you get delivered sometime like 2 o'clock in the morning, so you can't even look at it the night before. Then you go in the next morning, you get a brand new script. We get new pages clear up until half an hour before we go in front of the camera.
All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about the movies, because this film, Almost Salinas, is out this weekend, and your character, Max Harris. Now, I read somewhere, mm-hmm. of course, Tony, we've talked about TV,
uh-huh.
great success in films, too.
Yeah.
And generally, if you ask an actor what medium they prefer, they say
mm-hmm.
theater.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a quote from you once that you said that it's not quite so much the case. You're after the script more than
right.
anything.
That's true. I'd rather do a good movie than a mediocre play. I'd rather do a good TV script than a mediocre play. But if I were given three great scripts in those three media, I would have to say I'd probably prefer to do the play.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only because, you know, I go with the best script, no matter what the medium is. But given all being of equal quality, I would choose the theater.
Is that because of the... If I say instant gratification, I don't mean to make that sound mm-hmm. selfish in a way, but you know you're celebrating sort of the fruits of the labor right away.
Yeah, it's because you get to, you know, it's because you get to go on a ride with the audience. It's such give and take. It's such feeding from them. You can't feed from a crew,
uh-huh.
you know, because they've seen it all. They're standing behind a big piece of machinery and eating pizzas and smoking cigarettes and picking their noses, and they really, you know, there's nothing but...
It's hard to stand in the middle of Central California, right, in the wind and
yes,
the sun.
Yes, that's right.
Figure out how it's going to work. What is it about this script, Almost Salinas, that attracted you?
It's first of all, it's the best first script I've ever read. This was Terry Greene's first script, and I was doing a play at Steppenwolf, and one of the cast members there, who's a friend of Terry's, brought it in and said, my friend Terry Greene has written the script, would you read it? And
mm-hmm.
I said sure, and I took it home and promptly forgot about it for 3 weeks, and then he came in and said Terry,
which makes guys like Terry Greene just freak out, right? Because Mahoney's got the script and I haven't heard from him.
But then Chris came in again and said, Terry was wondering if you got a chance to read it. And I said, oh, yeah, I will. So I went home that night and I thought, oh, God, I better get, you know, I should read this. So I started to, and bam, I was drawn right into it. It's the characters are so great. It's a real good story. The dialogue was terrific. And I was just blown away. I couldn't believe this, you know, that this man hadn't written 5 or 10 scripts before this. So.
Your character, Max Harris, is this uh-huh. guy who lives in the Chalamet, California, right?
Right?
Which
uh-huh.
is San Luis Obispo County.
Right.
So that's That's south of San Francisco, isn't it? It's sort of central, yeah.
Yeah.
Steinbeck country.
Yes, exactly.
And Chalamet is the nearest town where James Dean was killed.
That's right.
In the 50s. And so this very rural area, your character, Max, runs a diner, and he's got a nice little sort of ensemble around you of characters.
Yeah.
But your character's holding on to something.
Yeah, my character has got some deep, dark secret, something that's plagued him, something he's got his demons for sure. And situations conspire to make him finally have to face these when a film company comes to town and he rents his diner to them to without knowing what the film is about. Turns out it's a documentary about the death of James Dean, and it's something that he feels he had a part in many, many years ago, and he's spent a lifetime trying to forget about this, and now he's about to see the whole thing reenacted in front of him, and he has to come to terms with it, and he does, and he's saved.
It's nice because I mean that was sort of your character's dilemma, but each of the people around you are in their own spot, sort of living in their own orbit, and this movie comes to town almost like a UFO descends on it, right?
Yeah, that's very good.
And spins everyone out back into another life in a way.
Yeah, that's very true.
Helps clean them up in a bit.
Yeah, it establishes a lot of relationships that that wouldn't have happened. Forces people to take long looks at themselves that maybe they wouldn't have done.
One of the things that struck me about this movie was how location becomes a character. I mean, this place really had a lot to do with it. It seemed as if it was pretty hot. It certainly was very windy, blowing in a change or blowing out the cobwebs or whatever. What was it like to film in a spot like that?
Well, physically, it's beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. But it was also one of the worst experiences as far as personal comfort goes. excuse me. It was about 105 degrees every day with winds that would just rip your skin to shreds in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And took a long time to drive there and then a long time to drive back to the hotel. And
there was a line, I think, in the notes where you couldn't get, there was no phone service.
No phone service,
I mean, cells didn't work, and then it was hard to even find a landline.
Yeah, and then what little shade we had was constantly being blown off, you know, these tents. The tents had collapsed and everything, and it was just, it was a nightmare physically, but it didn't matter, you know. It was... when you do a film like this, everybody's so involved in doing the film because they're not blasé, you know. They're in there for the love of the film and for the love of acting and the love of directing and cinematography, because we were all taking about, you know, the lowest possible amount of salary that our unions would allow us to, and it was truly a labor of love.